You're listening to DraftKings Network. You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to Darth Amin's Rule of Two. I am your Sith Lord, Darth Amin. I'm joined, as always, by my apprentice, Darth Cornpuzzle. This is the podcast where we break down everything Star Wars related, Star Wars content that comes out. We're reviewing Season 3 of The Bad Batch, the last season of The Bad Batch. So it's 10 and 11, Identity Crisis and Point of No Return. As we always do with these double episodes, not going to go blow by blow, just going to go broad strokes. But this was a good two episodes to go broad strokes on because each episode was pretty much one big ass broad stroke. Identity Crisis, the aptly named Identity Crisis Maze. It's about basically Emery Carr coming to grips with the idea that, oh shit, I work for some awful people.
Can't believe it's taken her this long.
No, especially like what happened with Omega and stuff. You think like she's got some sort of idea.
I think we've talked about this before. I feel like she's been brainwashed or some sort of editing to make her so blind to what she's doing. But this episode made it seem like she'd never thought about it before.
This might be a controversial comparison. She reminds me of slaves who lived in the house.
Oh, Samuel Jackson and Django.
Yes, identified with their captors and those enslaving them than they did the other people who are enslaved who are in lesser station, lesser status. She's a clone and she saw how they were treating other clones, but there's almost an air like, no, I'm different though. I'm not like them. When, you know, not only you like them, but when it comes to clones, you are literally them. Empathy does not seem to be something that Emery Carr has had a whole lot of up until now. So she goes to Hemlock. You guys are stalling because Nala Say, she's in prison. You don't know what y'all doing.
She wants the promotion. She wants the clearance. She wants to be chief scientist. And she gets it.
Hemlock does that. The episode starts out with a alien baby that seems to be force sensitive and an Aqualish who then drops a dime. Yeah, I'm looking for a bounty hunter.
Class one, baby. That top tier.
When Emery Carr gets the access, Hemlock takes her to go see the vault. And in the vault, there's just a bunch of kids in there. They all have high M counts. And she asks, why children? And Hemlock says, ain't no adults left with those characteristics, which is a very... He has several lines this episode that are scientific official ways of saying some real foul shit. This is a real scientific euphemism for, yeah, we killed them all. We killed all the adults that have these characteristics.
They also had the other diagnosis, which is they're a little tougher to deal with if they're adults.
Yes. Children are easier to obtain and more agreeable to subjugation.
It's true. It's an asshole thing to say, but it's true.
Then we get some exposition about how why it's so important to find Omega because her blood, her DNA holds the key to why these experiments have all failed, which is they cannot successfully replicate a high M count in a cloned tissue.
But I thought this was interesting and important because it means that it's not necessarily that Omega is force sensitive. And we kind of went through that with Asajj in the last episode because they have the M count kids. They got the red, green, and blue M count kids, but her blood is the only binder proven to be compatible to recreate. So because she's a special clone, her blood carries the M count to a clone that is recreated. So she's even more important than finding a Force-sensitive child.
Yes, she's more important than finding a Force-sensitive child, but I would disagree, Maze. I would say hers was the only instance of replicating an M count in clone tissue.
Okay.
And so they need her to figure out how to do it again, presumably in whatever Palpatine's body would be. Oh, and then he says to her when she introduces herself to one of the Force-sensitives, he says, limit your personal interactions with these specimens. They are scientific assets. And I have to admit to you, Maze, every time the word specimen was used, I thought of Gronk calling Tom Brady a specie man.
Specie man.
Every single time.
Love the specie mans. Yeah, this whole vault kids playroom, which kind of looked like the prison in Andor.
In Andor, right?
Yes, exactly. But it also reminded me a lot of Stranger Things, where Eleven is kept in the mental hospital with the other, basically, Force-sensitive children on Earth.
The original kid from the beginning of the movie,
The pizza delivery guy, it's Cad Bane!
You guys are unclonable. Hear the footsteps and the spurs, and it's a cool sound, and Cad Bane is clearly like something from the Old West, right?
Mm-hmm.
But why does anyone in Star Wars need spurs?
It's just style.
Yeah, stylish son of a bitch, man.
It's not function.
The only thing that's functional on Cad Bane are those tubes that he has coming out of him, which allow him to breathe in outer space. Everything else about him is literally just one stylish son of a bitch, man. The hat, the toothpaste, the vest.
I do have a question about Cad Bane, which is, why isn't there a Cad Bane show or a bounty hunter show? Why have they never done that?
There was supposed to be a bounty hunter show. That was one of the things, I think, right around the time Disney bought Lucasfilm. And then everything got suspended / canceled / turned into something else. Cad Bane's droid assistant, the little floating droid Toto, is voiced by Seth Green.
Oh, 92%, yo.
92%, yo. It's wild that in the span of basically a little over a week, Maze, we reviewed two very wildly different pieces of Seth Green content.
Yeah, we cover it all. But he has Toto run the blood test to determine the M count. It's a match.
That'll do.
They put the baby cat in a hover stroller, even though Toto's not a nurse droid, and it's crying because it wants its toy. Not that distressed that its parent is dead.
It whimpers a little when it notices that.
A little bit. More worried about the toy.
My favorite part is, as they're leaving, in the most disrespectful fashion ever, tips the Aqualish.
Oh, man.
Throws a shit ton of money at him.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's like throwing coins on the stage at the strip club, man.
Cad Bane must be a menace in strip clubs.
He makes it rain credits, but not conveniently.
Back to Tantus, Dr. Cars with the specie men. The little one says, he's talking about Nala Se. Where's Mrs. Nala Se? And she said she'd find out for me. Emery says, find out what? The little specie man says, if I'm the first Cobra formula in Star Wars.
Yep, there it is. Big time. Major Cobra formula there. But no, Nala Se said she was going to figure out how to get her to go home.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Nala Se.
Unrealistic expectations.
Oh my God, just say anything to make the kids shut up. I get it.
But this is our identity crisis, right? Emery Carr.
Yep.
Can't bond with the children like she would like to. The nice child. She's supposed to be cold and reserved as the doctor. Just run the experiments. But she's got a soft spot for these Force-sensitive children.
SP-32 steals her data pad and tries to escape.
Because he was clocking the combination.
Combination, yeah.
As Hemlock was leaving. And then it doesn't work. They send the room into lockdown.
She tries to talk him down, calm him down. She says, you're safe, SP-32. And he said, that's not my name. They call me Stacy. They call me SP.
They call me Jax.
That's not my name. That's not my name. Clone Commandos shoot his ass with the stun ray. She's like, they're just kids. And they're like, hey, man, I'm just following protocol.
Just do my job, man.
She goes to visit Nala Se. Nala Se says, so you've seen the shit we've been up to, huh? And I'm like, yeah. And she says, well, you got to do something. She's like, well, there's nothing I can do. I don't have that kind of power. Nala Se says, don't you?
Don't you? For whatever reason, the Kaminoan way of talking was especially evident to me in this scene.
Pretty annoying all the time.
It's hard to hold a conversation like this.
Get to the damn point. Tarkin summons Hemlock. Hemlock calls him on the holophone, and this is great because Tarkin's like, where's all this money going? Where are all these funds going?
This was awesome. I loved this moment because Hemlock says, don't worry about it, Tarkin. Send more money. Drop the bag. Pick up the check.
I like the way he broke it to him. He was like, this is a matter of great interest. Hold on. You try to tell us, like, nah, man, this isn't concerning you. I'm real interested. He's like, and then he says, to the Emperor, which as I am reading the Thrawn trilogy, Thrawn book, and the one I'm on, it's kind of simultaneous adventure with Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader. But there's a point where in the story, I mean, I could spoil this. This is never going to get made into a TV show. They're on this mission in the unknown region, as I said last week. And Thrawn has an inkling on why this is important. Vader asks him, why would we do this? And he says, I'm not going to tell you. And pisses Vader off. Like, what do you mean you're not going to tell me? He's like, well, I found that when I have a hunch and I tell people, they usually actively try to debunk the hunch along the way. So I'd rather let's just do this. And then if I'm right, I'll tell you. And if I'm wrong, I'll tell you, whatever. And so at some point, this hunch is correct, which is that these alien beings have kidnapped several Chiss children. These Chiss children are Force-sensitive, Maze. So in the Chiss, they call them, they have the third sight, which is a nice touch.
Keep your third sight open.
Yep. They don't have the term Force in the Chiss. They call them third-sighted, right? These third-sighted children are used to navigate the hyperspace lanes through the unknown region because it's not mapped. They just do this on purpose because this way you can never replicate. You can't just like hack in or steal one of their ships and fly there. The only way they do it is with these Force-sensitive children literally put on the ship, they make hyperspace jumps, and then the kids, through their precognition, will see there's a planet right here and they'll adjust course.
Yeah, that's literally Dune. That's what the Navigation Guild does in Dune, is they eat so much spice that they have the sight and they can predict the hyperspace lanes based on their big ass spice-riddled brains.
Spice-addled.
Riddled and addled.
I bring all this up to say, Vader says, tell me, and he says, Emperor knew. And basically, Vader realizes Thrawn is so favored with the Emperor because that's the Emperor's plan to expand the Empire into the unknown regions. And so Thrawn is going to help him do that. And Vader gets pissed that there's secrets that he's not privy to. I sense a little bit of that with Tarkin.
Would you say this is good management by the Emperor or bad management by the Emperor?
Good, because I think, even though I would imagine that Tarkin, that's an A1 day one, right? You tell him everything.
Mm-hmm.
But the Emperor tends to like, apparently, silos, right? He had the Separatists, and they didn't know that, like, Darth Vader wasn't there to, like, kind of help them. He was there to destroy them because he never wanted a Separatist movement. He just used it. So when you keep everybody in silos, much like he kept Dooku in the dark about Anakin, or that Anakin's not a Sith assassin, replace you and all these things. So it's effective as hell. I don't know if, like, your employees will love you for it, but it works.
Yeah, but it seems to have repercussions in the sense that Tarkin is mad at Hemlock here. He's not mad at the Emperor.
Yeah.
Or like Vader's mad at Thrawn. He's not mad at the Emperor.
At Thrawn.
So I would say it's good management. Nothing like a little friendly competition and rivalry amongst your subordinates. Or not so friendly.
Clone X, who's the assassin, contacts Hemlock, says he got intel out of the Trandoshan. Rhea Perlman's character.
Oh, Sid. Okay, I was trying to figure out who that was. So that's Sid, and then they got the info about the pirate, Fee, who's Wanda Sykes.
Hemlock says, don't return without the clone, basically. Don't come out back without Omega. Emery insists on going to pick up the new specimen, which is the little cat thing, with Scorch, who's the clone commando. They go to Coruscant. They meet up with Toto and Bane. She's asking a lot of questions, and Bane is like, yo, I don't be answering questions like this. Harkening back to kind of some of the stuff from The Mandalorian, where it's like, you don't get to ask questions. Here's the thing. Here's the bounty. We bring it in. The less questions asked, the better. She asks, how many others like this have you captured? And Bane says, let's just say I'm really good at my job. And I'm like, oh, that's badass, man. What a badass.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, I would like a bounty hunter show that follows Cad Bane or Asajj Ventress around, but maybe they're better used in small doses as these tough-talking splashes of sinister conversation.
In some ways, The Mandalorian was supposed to be kind of like a bounty hunter show, albeit.
Yeah, exactly. They abandoned that pretty quickly, but that was how it started.
All right, we finally end back in the little prison, and where is SP-32? He's been in isolation. He's been in solitary confinement pretty much for 2 rotations, 2 days in Star Wars language as punishment for escape attempts. I love how in Star Wars, they got a different word for year. They got a different word for day. They got a different word for month. But hours and minutes, hey, if I'm not back in 2 hours, come get, like, okay, so we're just doing that one? All right.
What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
But the kid, Eva, is now mad at her because she lied. So then when she's putting the blood in the centrifuge, she's thinking about the kid. She opens up a desk drawer where she kept the toy that Omega left behind and leaves that for Eva. Isn't that nice?
Oh, she's got a whore, as they say.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
All right, second episode. Clonex is tracking Fee, watching her, hacks in her computer, figures out where she's been visiting a lot, some Outer Rim world, thus puts 2 and 2 together, tells Hemlock, I'm headed over there, goes over there, puts on the cloaking device as he arrives on the planet, which is pretty dope because it just disappears off all the radar.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the Bad Batch are trying to get ready to leave. You remember last week, Asajj Ventress told him to get out of Dodge or whatever. Wrecker's loading shit with the Gronk droid or Gronk, Gonky.
Specie Man.
Yeah, Specie Man. Omega doing the farewells. She leaves as kind of like a memento keepsake. Goggles and her stupid little toy.
Yep.
The mayor's daughter is like, you're coming back, right? And like, yeah, yeah. But, you know, that's the famous boat named Live Forever. Right there.
Yep. Sorry, summer camp's over. I don't think we'll be back. And the clone assassin lands in the same cave that Asajj used. We've got Hunter doing the classic, I've got a bad feeling about this.
Yeah.
I don't know, Amin. Bad feelings. The assassin finds Omega almost immediately.
Scans her.
Seconds.
It's her employee ID picture.
Mm-hmm.
It shows up on his little scanner. It's like, yep, found her. Calls in the clones. They come in the armored transports. They land. They lay waste to Paboo. Or Star Wars Mykonos.
The shot of the Star Destroyer looming in the sky was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And also the assassin blew up the Marauder with some explosives. It's a tough look, dude.
And Wrecker saves a droid, gets knocked out. He's in the water. They pull him out the water. They try to nurse him back to health. They're all escaping. And most of the episode is just like this siege of Paboo. It ends up with Omega basically telling Crosshair, look, the way they're going to stop doing this is if I turn myself in. And Crosshair's like, can't do that, da da da. Like, they're going to take you to, I don't know where it is. And she says, that's exactly the point. This way, we can find out. And like, they'll search you for electronics. She tells him, well, then you can just shoot the little tracker on the spaceship as it leaves, like you always do, because you're so awesome at it.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, there's a lot of variables in there, but she's like, that's the only way. And like, okay, she turns herself in. They load her up on the thing. Crosshair runs after it, shoots, and misses. And I laughed. I laughed hard.
Air ball.
It's a bad air ball.
Yeah.
Dare I say, it's kind of like my air ball. Part of it is his reaction, which is the sigh of like, I knew this would happen. Like, he just knew. Mm-hmm. But also part of it, like, we've established all season long, this guy has Star Wars Parkinson's. Now we're going to trust him to hit the biggest shot of his life? Just didn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair to Crosshair, he did get attacked by a handful of troopers right before he was about to shoot. So it's not like he straight up missed.
Yeah, he wasn't like in position on a ridge somewhere waiting. Yeah. He was running after this thing and just stopped him.
It's not like the Sheikhs hooked his shot and he shanked it.
Yeah.
It's that he was late because he was distracted. But so now her big plan to have them follow her is now in jeopardy. She's in the back of the assassin's ship and I thought maybe she was going to meditate and do something Force-like, but it seems like she was just sighing as they blast off into hyperspace.
No, she's meditating, but she's meditating in the same way that she meditated with Crosshair.
Mm-hmm.
Not, no, this is going to make me do some superpower stuff, but just so, hey, I don't want to freak out. I'm trying to relax. And that's the end of the episode.
There was that cool moment where the assassin sniped the pilot of the dropship.
Yeah.
Bolo style, take out his own man.
Own man, yeah.
You know, can't have that. And Hunter gets waterlogged, crashes into the water, so that plan comes short. But yeah, pretty cut and dry. They came right in, they got her, they got out.
Yep. And with surprising efficiency, too. We've seen Clone Force 99 fight the Clone Commandos before. They kicked their ass.
Yeah, it was a rout.
Maze, I was trying to figure out, like, oh, if they don't track her, how are they going to find her? And then I realized, oh, shit, they probably aren't going to find her. How many episodes do we have left? Three?
We've got four left, so 12, 13, 14, 15.
Maybe they don't find her. Maybe this is how it happens, right? It's definitely circling around Endgame.
It's time to call Echo and Rex. It's time to put their heads together and find this Mount Tantus. I mean, it's going to be Emery Carr.
She's going to drop the dime?
I think that's what episode 10 was seeding, is that once Omega comes back and shows up, Emery is going to, she's already had her identity crisis. Now it's time for her to embrace the light side and help out Omega and somehow notify the Bad Batch of the location.
Question, does Emery know where she is? She knows she's on Tantus, but like, how long has she been there? Can't she even give coordinates?
I guess that's a fair question. Can't you drop a pin? Do you have to give directions? Or could you just throw up a beacon, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Give me an address.
What I'm envisioning is Omega and Emery doing it together. And she'll give Emery the way to contact or who to contact. And then Emery will help her get there. That's my guess.
Before we get out of here, the Star Wars account on Instagram and social and everything, they dropped a trailer for the new season of Tales of the Jedi. Drops on May 4th. May the 4th be with you. And like season one, it looks flames, flames. I love what they're doing with this series. I hope they do 10 minutes of exposition about this character, or, you know, 25 minutes over two episodes of exposition on that character. Be two stories that they're going to be telling in this season of Tales of the Jedi. One, the backstory for Morgan Elspeth. You remember her from The Mandalorian. You remember her from the Ahsoka series. We found out in Ahsoka that she was actually a Witch of Dathomir survivor, and her alliance with Thrawn was to help him, and in return, he was going to help her resurrect or bring back all of these Witches of Dathomir coffins or whatever. So this is kind of the backstory of her witnessing the massacre that happened on Dathomir when Palpatine basically ordered Grievous and Dooku to annihilate their population. And so we're seeing a lot of cool stuff, including her meeting Thrawn for the first time and telling him basically why she wants to offer herself to the Empire. And he has a very cool line where he says, "Offer accepted," and he walks away. It's also young Thrawn, by the way,
mm-hmm.
which is a little jarring to see, because he's not the Thrawn he was, obviously, in the Ahsoka, but he's not even the Thrawn he was in Rebels. This is even younger, right around the time, I guess, of the books that I'm reading, of him coming into his own in the Empire. The other story that's being told is that of Barriss Offee and how she became an Inquisitor. And I don't remember, Mace, do you remember anything like that, of officially becoming an Inquisitor?
No, it's all new to me.
I believe this is new. So Barriss Offee, if you don't know, Barriss Offee was Ahsoka's kind of classmate, I guess you would say. They were homies and friends and all that stuff.
Same Jedi draft class. They were going 1-2.
Exactly.
You know, it was back and forth all year.
At some point, Barriss Offee starts to become disenchanted the Jedi. As a lot of kind of, you know, this is what happened to Dooku happened. A lot of people are like, are we corrupt? Are we really the good guys here asking these kind of questions as opposed to blindly following? She decides to take it in her own hands to bomb the Jedi Temple. But when she does that, she frames Ahsoka. So it makes it seem like Ahsoka did it. That's basically the events that lead into Ahsoka going on trial and then eventually vindicated. But then she's now lost her faith in the Jedi Order and Ahsoka leaves. So that's how we know Barriss Offee does this. But apparently she eventually became an Inquisitor. They show us the actual process of how former Jedi and other Force sensitives are turned into Inquisitors. And so we get a Grand Inquisitor cameo there. We get a cameo from Vader, meet your new master. I'm very, very excited for this. Like I said, season one was incredible. We got a lot of backstory on Ahsoka, both her as a child before she was sent to Coruscant to train at the Jedi Temple, or post leaving the Jedi Order. We also got backstory on Dooku.
So quick question, I mean, are these previews for two of the episodes and there's four other ones? Or is it, you think, multiple episodes on each subject?
I'm coming to this as someone who just watched this trailer real time, ladies and gentlemen.
Same.
Season one followed Dooku and Ahsoka across multiple episodes. So it wasn't a one episode thing. It was six episodes total. There were three episodes devoted to Ahsoka.
So it'll probably be 3 and 3 then.
3 and 3, and they'll go back and forth alternating. New characters like Morgan Elspeth and old characters that we had to take at face value at the time, like Barriss Offee. It'll be fun to see them expand this. This is kind of like the gift that keeps on giving as an anthology series because there's so many people in Star Wars. What's Cad Bane's backstory? We don't know. He just shows up and he's a badass bounty hunter. But like, how do you get to be a badass bounty hunter? What planet is he from? What species is he? We've never seen any aliens that look like him. And so on and so forth. Pick and choose different people to kind of find out what their backstory was. So I'm excited, Maze. May the 4th is when this comes out. And so May the 4th, we'll be reviewing this as well.
April the 4th is when they drop the trailer. That's not a saying, though.
No. No. One last non-Bad Batch-related Star Wars thing. Blue Milk is coming out. I cannot stress enough, this is a shameless money grab. Blue Milk is literally just milk with blue food coloring in it. You can literally make it by yourself at home. Buy yourself a vial of blue. Every time you have some milk, just drop a couple drops in there, stir it up. Blue Milk.
It's no cerveza cristal.
now that I will. You know what? How do I buy that? Is that available for sale anywhere?
Let's get a case of cerveza cristal ASAP.
Cerveza cristal. Cerveza cristal.
12-ounce bottle on Instacart, $21.99. Amazing. They also sell it apparently at Total Wine. Okay, this is going to happen. I'm going to get some Cerveza Cristal and do this at least once on one of these episodes of of Rule of Two. You got anything else, Maze? Have we covered it all?
I mean, I saw a dumb rumor that I don't believe that they've already decided the Acolyte won't have a second season. I am ignoring it. I'm calling it unverified, unsourced.
I'm going to say, without knowing anything about the show, it's the type of show that I think you can do in one season.
Okay.
Think about it. It's just about like this thing, like this time. Now, if you want to keep making seasons and have it kind of like, isn't Better Call Saul like a prequel to
Breaking Bad?
Does the end of Better Call Saul lead you all the way up to the beginning of Breaking Bad?
Yep.
So, I mean, you could do that theoretically because again, they're operating in secret this whole time. It's just like, how far do you want to take it?
I do wonder. So if you're pitching your Star Wars show and you are not guaranteed a second season, do you write an ending for your first season that could be the very end, or do you save that ending for later on?
No, you write a cliffhanger and hope they change their mind.
Right. So I don't imagine that The Acolyte is going to end conclusively after one season. I do hope that it is a little more complete than Ahsoka.
Right. Ahsoka was supposed to be one season, and then it's like, let's just end it with Lord Baelin, like looking at the statues.
Let's end it with not an ending.
And then you just dare them, like, all right, what you gonna do about it?
Yeah.
That's gonna do it for Rule of Two. For Anthony Mays, Darth Corn Puzzle, I am Darth Amin, reminding you that let's just say we're pretty good at our jobs.
Same note to Amin.